by Mae Brussell during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.
Okay, now we're ready for World Watchers. It's just about 2 minutes after 8, and this is KAZU FM, and I hope everything is all right with you during this holiday season, and it's been a hard week. Went to a funeral today of a very beautiful young woman who passed away, and in between all the research and newspapers, there's some very happy things and some very sad things that happen that you have to take in stride during your daily life. All of us do. It's a shock, and it's disconcerting, and it's upsetting, but I don't know why it happens. It happens, and she was part of this Monterey Peninsula, and her husband, David Mean, was my first producer over at KLRB when I first went on the air 11 years ago. So we've been friends that long, a long time. And we'll begin our program now. This is broadcast number 574, and it is December the 6th, 1982. Last year, in keeping with a resume of what was taking place a year ago, tape number 522, December the 6th, 1981, I was talking about the anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. It's 2 years now. And that broadcast brought up to date the espionage intrigue around Mark David Chapman, the fellow that shot John Lennon. And I went into the Richard Allen Japanese connections. In case any of you want these tapes, they are available. I got many calls this week for tapes on the John Lennon murder, and it's available. I did a whole series on it. And I talked about Mark David Chapman's trips to Geneva, Switzerland, and Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, with the American military and his contacts in Geneva, and with the Laotian tribesmen that were brought over by Edwin Wilson and the CIA and Robert Vesco, and his London safe houses and the Beirut, Lebanon connections, training for terrorism and shooting, and the links of Senator Strom Thurmond, of Senate Judiciary, to John Mitchell, and to people that would want John Lennon murdered, and how he had wanted him sent out of the country at the time of the nominations of Richard Nixon going back to 1972, and then his current visits and contacts with the likes of Frank Turple and the assassination teams. That was just a year ago tonight that we talked about those things, and it's 2 years since John Lennon was murdered. A story, I want to do some short items with you and then get on to two major subjects tonight. A story in the San Francisco Chronicle, alleged Nazi gets a stay of deportation. Mr. Arturkovich, Andra, A-N-D-R-J-A, Arturkovich, he's 83 years old now. He lives down at Seal Beach, down near San Clemente, got another stay from being deported from this country. John Kennedy wanted him kicked out before John Kennedy was murdered, and every time there's an order to kick him out of this country, he seems to get another chance to hang around. This is the guy that was charged with murdering at least 300,000 people, even more. I've mentioned his name before, and I wondered of the contacts that John DeLorean had with his friend Mr. Nezeth down in that territory, and were there any links to this particular Arturkovich? I mentioned it several weeks ago. Well, just this week, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said, well, you can still stay. And I think he's so important that they can't deport him. There was an obituary in the New York Times this past week, November 23rd, almost 2 weeks ago, on Howard R. Bloomquist, B-L-U-O-O-M-Q-U-I-S-T. Interesting, the background of certain people you never would know until they pass away. And then the New York Times has these marvelous obituaries. He was vice president and director of Warner Lambert and Company. That was the cover for Otto von Bolschwing and the Nazi Galen operation. And Elmer Bost of that group was the godfather of Richard Nixon's career and in charge of the American Cancer Society. He was also vice president of W.R. Grace and Company. I've mentioned them many weeks, the partner J. Peter Grace with Otto Ambrose from I.G. Farben, from Auschwitz, from the poison gases, and the Flick group from Nazi Germany, the Frederick Flick group that's put millions, $390 million into Mr. Strauss in Bavaria for elections. Linked, they own one-third of Grace Company. He was vice president of W.R. Grace, and he also was vice president of General Food, which includes Jell-O and Kool-Aid. And I thought of Jonestown. So we have Warner Lambert, which is the American Cancer Society, W.R. Grace, which was the Zyklon B, associated with Zyklon B, and the extermination gas, and Jonestown with the cyanide, the Kool-Aid. And there were parallels of Jonestown to Nazi Germany. So I thought the three boards that he was vice president of were very interesting. Also, I've been talking quite a bit about the Vatican scandals. I'm not going to pursue the Vatican tonight. I'll give them a rest. But an article in the Houston Post this week, the United States Bishop Paul Marcinkus, the one who's hiding inside the Vatican, who refuses to answer a subpoena, turned it back, would be arrested by the Italian government for a flight of capital out of Italy. He is going to be promoted to cardinal to run the daily affairs of the Vatican, even though all this scandal is going on. Another proposal, this is another article from the Houston Post, a proposal would allow naturalized citizens to become president, and it names specifically Mr. Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State. Now, the man who proposed this to change the Constitution is none other than Senator Thomas Eagleton, Democrat of Missouri. Eagleton caused quite a furor. His past history did at the time of the elections in 1972 because George McGovern wanted him for the vice president. And then it turned out that he had been subjected to quite a bit of electric shock in a mental institution at one time. So they had to drop his name as the vice president, the suggested vice president. Maybe they did some mind control in the hospital. Maybe there's some electrodes in Mr. Eagleton's head where they said, we'll change the Constitution for Kissinger. Goodness knows, I think he got more than electric shock in the mental hospital. I think they must have programmed him, a Democrat, somewhere in his little head with one of those implanted electrodes to surface and what the former people who were born in other countries, and specifically it's for Henry Kissinger to become president of the United States. Now, last week I briefly mentioned an article in the New York Times, one subject on the Vatican, but I'm going to switch from that to Nazi Germany. And I mentioned that three main bankers were investigating the scandals of the bank, of Ambrosiano and the $1.2 billion that was missing out of dummy fronts in Panama. They still won't say where the money went, and much money missing out of Luxembourg and 200 banks in Europe, Liechtenstein. And in the New York Times, the writer Henry Kamm, K-A-M-M, said the fourth banker to help the Vatican is of high international standing, Mr. Herman Apps. I mentioned him last week, H-E-R-M-A-N-N-A-B-S, of West Germany, is added to the original panel of three to emphasize the importance that the Vatican is attaching to professional supervision of its bank. Mr. Apps is a prominent Roman Catholic layman, and I mentioned that last week. So this week I wanted to bring some references on the background, current references on the background of Mr. Apps, so you would understand his expertise of what it means for him at this time to be appointed in charge of the entire Catholic Church's money to see where it goes. In the book by James Martin, All Honorable Men, it was published by Little Brown in Boston in 1950. He has quite a bit on Mr. Apps, but he also has a paragraph on page 70 about I.G. Farben. Now, Farben is important because Apps was on the board of I.G. Farben, and Pope John Paul II, as I said, worked for I.G. Farben. And in this book, he explains the I.G. Farben New Order, capital N, capital O, the New Order plan was initiated by the Farben management to show the German high command how corporate expansion of the IG company as a business could be geared to the interests of the German government for the purpose of establishing German power all over the world. They told the German government under IG we could take over the world. It was the result of 20 years of close work between the management of industry and government. Now, this is the industry that imported slave labor. I don't have to go into the details of that. You can get the books on Nazi Germany and the rooms for gassing and the trains to the extermination centers. Now, this was the company, IG Farben. in return, and see if this sounds like Ronald Reagan, in return for these corporations and this one helping Germany, Germany gave more assistance to the growth of organizations like IG Farben. They got special tax concessions favoring the growth of combines, which you're seeing today, modification of corporation law to give the management free hands, and government subsidies for special projects, just as J. Peter Grace got for what I call the body bags, $2 billion for a special project to convey something from Colorado to the ocean. Okay, the body bags. So that these combines got this special benefit, and among the banks that were given money included the Deutsche Bank of Mr. Apps, ABS. And this book, All Honorable Men, says none of this development, none of it would be possible without loans from the Allied nations. Now, tomorrow is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, so keep in mind what was going on between the bankers and the German government before we were attacked and continuously after we were attacked until the war was over. Now, it's a new book by Paul Manning, new last year, called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. There are several paragraphs that I want to read to you. I usually paraphrase material and outline it to bring it in, but it's so important that you hear the exact wording of what Mr. Manning is saying, Paul Manning, about Martin Bormann. He said the concern of the Nazis after Gustav Franz Wagner was seen in Brazil proved that to the Nazis that they were home free, that they wouldn't be extradited, and that the cover when Willy Brandt was a president of Germany and this Nazi was seen down in Brazil, when they didn't want him back and they gave a story that Martin Bormann was dead, Willy Brandt, this was a passport to freedom for Martin Bormann at this time, and then they could continue doing their work, and Martin Bormann is very much alive. In this book, he says, while Germany's bankers were collectively responsible for the financing of Hitler's war effort, the German bankers, the dean of them all is Hermann Joseph Apps, ABS. Money was his life, and his astuteness in banking and international financial manipulations enabled the Deutsche Bank to serve as a leader in fueling ambitions and the accomplishments of Adolf Hitler and Martin Bormann. His dominance, Mr. Apps, was retained when the Federal Republic of Germany picked it up after the war was over. He was still chairman of the Deutsche Bank. He was still director of IG Farben when the war was over, and others such as Damier Benz, which again bought into the J. Peter Grace company. Oh, they sold part of that to put the money into J. Peter Grace. And the influence of Mr. Apps is described in this book, how he brought art financiers to this country like the Tysons, and under the cover of other front organizations, they created like art exhibits to make them popular with the United States. Another important section of this book about Mr. Apps says that by the 1970s, this is well after, just before Watergate's in, after Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy are murdered, the West Germans concluded that to influence United States public opinion, they would set new events such as Willy Brandt announcing in June of 1972 at the Harvard University that Germany would give $47 million to establish a foundation for in honor of the Marshall Plan. The overriding function of the German George C. Marshall Research Foundation at Harvard is public relations to cosmetize German industrialists and bankers whose corporations worked so successfully throughout the Third Reich. In October 1978, that's not long ago, the Marshall Foundation was utilized as the platform for Dr. Hermann Apps, now honorary president of the Deutsche Bank, to address businessmen and bankers and members of the Foreign Policy Association in New York City on problems and prospects of American-German economic cooperation. Now, the meeting was chaired by John J. McCloy, whose name comes through all of this. John J. McCloy was a member of the Warren Commission who hid the Nazis, who worked for Chase Manhattan Bank, the High Commissioner of Germany who released the Nazis, he brought Mr. Apps over here, the Wall Street banker and lawyer. He had close workings with Mr. Apps, Dr. Apps, when McCloy was U.S. High Commissioner for Germany during the post-war reconstruction. That's when he let all the top Nazis out. He had close working. At that time, Hermann Apps, and remember, he's on the board of directors of IG Farben, was the executive of the Deutsche Bank after the war. He was directing and spending the American Marshall Plan money in West Germany as chairman of the Reconstruction Loan Corporation of the Federal Republic of Germany. So what you have is a man who funded Hitler, funded Martin Bormann, who's in charge of George C. Marshall's money to reconstruct loans to corporations. With these people on the dais that day were former Secretary of the Treasury Henry Cabot Lodge, and that's another man that Otto von Bolschwing worked for when he came to this country and got his citizenship between Warner Lambert and Henry Cabot Lodge, the Lodge family. And this John J. McCloy was the U.S. commissioner who released the top Nazis. And the reason I bring it out is that isn't something that happened a long, long time ago. We are in the throes of bankruptcy. I cut out four major articles this week on the international collapse of the banks that maybe I'll share with you next week, but it's the wrong thing to do just a week before Christmas. Major stories, Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, their various magazine articles, there are four large articles on the collective debt the United States has given out, $750 billion to Ronald Reagan offered several billion to Brazil on a 90-day loan. What can they do? They can't even grow poppies in 90 days and sell them. How can you give a loan of several billion? No transportation in this country, rapid transportation. As he said, we have to raise our gas taxes. The roads are collapsing. The trucking rates go up. The prices go up. The inflation. He's out there giving money that they can't pay back. These bankers collapsed the American banks and the capital, I'm sure, that was missing. They have salted away in many, many places. In this book, on Martin Bormann and Mr. Apps, it says that the apex of the vast financial and economic administration structure was Reichsleiter Martin Bormann, R-E-I-C-H-S-L-E-I-T-E-R, Martin Bormann. He had his grip on German finance. He took charge of the finances of the Führer. And he had the funds of the Reich Chancellery that funded Adolf Hitler's salary. His friendship and association with Dr. Hermann Joseph Apps predated Apps' move into the management of the Deutsche Bank. Dr. Apps was a partner in the prestigious bank, the private bank of Delbruck, Schickler and Company in Berlin, S-C-H-I-C-K-L-E-R. And the Reich Chancellery in Berlin was its largest account. It was through this account that Adolf Hitler got his salary as Chancellor of the Reich. Martin Bormann, who controlled the Reich Chancellery, and he's alive today, was absolute the moment he succeeded Rudolf Hess. I'm reading from the book on Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and tying it into Dr. Hermann Apps, who has just been assigned in charge of the IG Farben Pope to handle the Vatican finances for a member of the board of IG Farben. Going back to this paragraph, Martin Bormann, whose control of the Reich Chancellery was the absolute the moment he succeeded Rudolf Hess, maintained his cordial relationship with the Berlin banker. Dr. Apps moved to the Deutsche Bank December 30th, 1937, where he became the first member of the board of management, later the chairman of the most powerful bank in Germany, and he still is there today, 82 years old. He saw into their new areas of financial expansion and power throughout the world. Mr. Bormann knew that his relationship with Hermann Apps, and Bormann is alive today and Apps is alive, would tighten as his own power grew. Remaining on friendly terms with the Third Reich's leading banker was a contentment. He knew in 1943 that his Nazi banking committee would be well established. And this goes into the next part of this program. In 1943, with his Nazi banking committee well established, as I say, and by 1943, and that the means to ultimately take the reins of finance unto himself, Bormann could do this. Throughout this committee and throughout the power that flowed from Hitler to himself, Bormann could set a new Nazi state policy when the time was ripe for general transfer of capital, for gold and stocks and bearer bonds to safety in neutral nations. What were the neutral nations? Argentine, Madrid, the Scandinavian countries, to Ireland, where the fascist Odessa headquarters were set up, South America, Uruguay, Paraguay, Mexico. To conclude some statements in this book, Martin Bormann, like Adolf Hitler, had no illusions that their victory was going to be on the battlefield. Hitler settled in his own mind a different kind of victory, compromise and peace with the adversaries. And to Martin Bormann, he commented in 1943, "They will not make peace for us now, but in the summer of 43, and that's that important year I keep bringing out, Hitler requested Martin Bormann to call a meeting of the SS security chiefs. Present was Hitler, Martin Bormann, Himmler, Mueller of the Gestapo, and Schellenberg, head of the SS Foreign Intelligence. Of all of these, I'm not sure which ones are dead." Okay, I have to look up Schellenberg. I don't remember, but that was a meeting that Hitler called. Now, today, Mr. Apps lives in Frankfurt. And this book on Mr. Apps and on Bormann says he resides in Frankfurt. He has not lost his touch. The Deutsche Bank is the largest in Europe, the third largest in the world. Hasn't lost his touch for international investment on behalf of his clients in West Germany. He recently bought two skyscrapers in Houston, Texas, the Pennzoil and Shell buildings in Houston. As Vice President Ferdinand Krier of the Deutsche Bank said, "Our clients believe that American real estate is an attractive proposition at this time. Our goal is more opportunities for our clients, including the purchase of the massive World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan." So this gentleman, 82 years old, is still working, and now this prestigious appointment recognized by the Pope. He entertains Arafat, but that's just a little tiny thing. He is a very powerful man who has a powerful bank, and Martin Bormann is alive, and a lot of the flight of the capital, the gold, the stocks, the bonds, leaving this country are being salted away by the very people that sold this country out. And it is a shock. I haven't seen anything in a major newspaper about that appointment of Mr. Apps. Just one more comment. When the banks after Pearl Harbor, at the time we went into war, again, it's just an anniversary tomorrow, December the 7th, when we went into the Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt said that the United States would be at war with Japan and Germany, and the American banks in France became under the German control at that time. The two exceptions were Morgan Bank and Chase of Manhattan. Both got special treatment through the intercession of Dr. Hermann Joseph Apps of the Deutsche Bank, financial advisor to the German government, because Dr. Apps was very close to Lord Shawcross of London, the city of London, S-H-A-W-C-R-O-S-S, Lord Shawcross. He was a British financial leader in London. Now, Shawcross had been serving as an advisor to the Morgan Bank, to the French one, and to the German, and because Mr. Apps was in close contact with Chase Manhattan and the London banks, they continued throughout the entire war. And to top that off, Mr. Shawcross later became chief prosecutor for the United Kingdom's at the International Military Tribunal in Nuremberg. He had many friendly conversations with banker Dr. Apps, who was under house arrest in 1945. So the concession of the British and Chase Manhattan was done with Hitler's the man writing the paychecks for the Reich Chancellery. He continued during the war with Chase Manhattan and with the London banks. He was arrested as a war criminal. The chief investigator of Nuremberg was the man that was banking with Dr. Apps. And from Chase Manhattan, John J. McCloy released the Nazis. And the problems that I studied along these lines began in 1963, November 22nd, when I wanted to know who killed John Kennedy, because John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles were on the Warren Commission, along with Leon Jaworski, one of the investigators at Dachau and Nuremberg, and also Gerald Ford of the CIA, was to later, I didn't know then, was to become president. And as I say, the Nazi mob connections to the murder of John Kennedy were concealed by the very people who had been doing all this trickery during World War II. Well, not only John Kennedy died, but add up the war statistics. Was it 80 million from all the different countries? These bloody battles were going on all over. There was a movie last night on TV on Bataan. Little do they know, the dead or the survivors, that that was a game plan, and they were the pawns. If they all died, it didn't matter. If they survived, it didn't matter. The money kept on through the banks, and that is the fact of life. Until you take control of your own lives and have some dignity or self-respect for yourself, you are cannon fodder to them. For those of you that didn't hear it a half hour before, when I was on, before I came on the air, locally, the Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies was talking about atomic bombs and missiles and nuclear freeze. All of that was brought over to us. Not after, it was after Pearl Harbor when the war was over. And all you see in the newspaper and discussions is not the word peace, but the word war. How should you do it? Where do you distribute the weapons? Who will hit first? Will there be medical care? Who covers for us? Will they see where our bombs are placed? Which ones goes faster? Who's in touch of them? Will a person be crazy and make a mistake? All of this idiocy, billions of dollars of bankruptcy into playing a game like Russian roulette. I used to think the people that held a pistol to their head and played Russian roulette were totally out of their mind. And I have a friend we discuss every day. The news is totally insane. I don't know how people live with it, but unless you recognize it as insanity, and these people are still alive. That is the amazing thing. Those people that planned all this are doing just as they planned. The minute they knew they couldn't take the Soviet Union in 1943, January 8th, 1943, and the dates keep going back to these same names, these same banks, the same people, the Pope that worked for Solvay Chemical, at IG Farben at Auschwitz, now giving the entire Vatican to the Reich Bank and to the head of the Deutsche Bank. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The history books don't tell it, that the New York Times can tell you this man got an appointment. A lot of people suggest on the program that I use names too fast and that I don't give a background of the people. And I say, well, look at the front page of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or any newspaper article. They tell you that Henry Kissinger went to Germany today, but they don't tell you what kind of a snake he is. He doesn't crawl, he flies, but they don't give you the background. And once you study the background and look up who they are and read books and hopefully listen to this program every week, maybe get an idea of who's really running the world. And maybe these Catholics that are against the atomic bomb should be notified about Mr. Herman Apps and the appointment for the Vatican money, because those people pushed slave labor, pushed genocide, didn't blush at the horrendous murders and tortures, relished in it, planned factories where they could use people until they died, like Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger at Punemun. They worked them till they were skeletons with no food and then put them in ditches and brought in the next batch. Is this the kind of a world that we're going to face in the future? Yes, I think so. And people better wise up. That's the purpose of my doing my research every week, is to call attention to these situations. And they're very alive in the news today. Now, we're going to take a 1 minute break here. This is KAZU FM. And I'm going to ask you, if possible, those of you who listen to the station, to, if you haven't, send in a check. I'm not asking those who did, but those who haven't donated money to the station. It would be nice to remember the station. We've gotten some very nice checks, incidentally, and I appreciate that. You can send them to me, or you can write Box KAZU Box 206 Pacific Grove, California 939.